Welcome to the GAPS Masterclass. This is Melanie Christner, and I'm so excited to welcome you to Module 1, in which we're going to talk about blood sugar and toxins and the connections to diabetes and adrenal health. I would invite you to read through the legal part of the GAPS Masterclass modules at least once. It's in the beginning of each module. Talks about the issues of copywriting and printing for your personal use, information like that. So go ahead and read that through once. That'll be helpful. All right, let's get started. So in Module 1, we'll be discussing the basics of blood sugar and why you might want to care about it, what ignoring it leads to. We'll also talk about a lesser known factor in blood sugar dysregulation. And we'll talk about self-assessing for indications of trouble and steps and strategies to correct blood sugar imbalances as well as adrenal imbalances. How did we get here? When we were going through our nutritional therapy training, I remember the following tenet being drummed into our heads. Never before in the history of mankind have we had the emergency need to lower our blood sugar. That is, until we began inundating ourselves with processed carbohydrates and sugar. After diet and digestion, blood sugar regulation is the next most important foundation of health. And just to go over the six foundations of health, those would be number one, diet, number two, digestion, number three, blood sugar, number four, fatty acid status, number five, mineral status, and number six, hydration. The balance of blood sugar affects the entire messaging system of our bodies, i.e. the endocrine or hormonal system. Humanity was humming along fine without refined sugar until about 400 years ago. Then sugar found its place in one of the five major milestones on our march towards the modern diet. And those five milestones were the agricultural revolution about 12,000 years ago, then the introduction to refined sugar in the 1600s, the industrial revolution of the 1800s, then we have the food giants in the 1900s, and finally World War II, 1939 to 1945. Each milestone left its own mark on our food system. In this module, however, we'll focus on number two, the introduction of refined sugar. In 1700, sugar was typically for the wealthy, and 4 pounds per year was average consumption. By 1900, consumption had risen to 90 pounds per year, and by 2008, more than half of Americans consumed a half pound of sugar daily, totaling about 180 pounds of sugar per year. It's kind of crazy. Sugar has the distinction of being 10 times more addictive than cocaine, and we are certainly addicted. This overconsumption has been a big player in our current health issues. Let's find out how that works. So in this section, we'll talk about how blood sugar works and what manages it in our bodies. We'll also talk about why this is important to you. The primary organs involved that act as blood sugar's managers are the pancreas, the liver, and the adrenals. And they're pretty closely connected and they work together in kind of a ricochet relationship. So let's talk about what happens to your carbohydrates when you eat your next meal. First, we have our chemical enzymes and mechanical chewing actions taken on those carby foods. These chewing and enzyme actions turn these carbohydrates, which are hopefully veggies instead of cereals or crackers, into something that can then be converted by the liver into glucose. The glucose jets over to the bloodstream, where it will be tightly regulated for too much or too little. The bloodstream police are only happy with about 80 to 100 milligrams per deciliter of blood, give or take. Then the pancreas gets involved by sending out one of two hormones, either insulin or the lesser-known glucagon. Insulin is released to escort glucose in the bloodstream, kind of knocking on the cell's doors to signal them to allow the glucose in. And if there is excess glucose, insulin makes sure it is stored as glycogen in the liver and muscles for later use. Now, in between meals, or when you've exercised, your blood sugar dips, and glucagon is then released by the pancreas to convert the stored glycogen back into glucose and send it back into the blood if your blood sugar dips a little low. That's what happens when blood sugar is working as it should. However, that's not how it works for too many people today. I've linked to a video by Margaret Floyd, NTP, Certified GAPS Practitioner, explaining what can go wrong with blood sugar regulation. And that link is in the workbook. I really recommend you watch that. It's a great video. So how does it go wrong? Unfortunately, fat storage is only the beginning of the problems that occur when one is not managing their blood sugar. As Margaret mentioned in the video, the adrenals take quite a hit. And this leads to adrenal fatigue and a disruption of our hormonal endocrine system in general. Our hormones are the messengers for the whole body. When they're out of whack, messages are missent or untimely and generally screwed up. This has implications for all the organs in the endocrine system and the body as a whole. And this is a very good reason to maintain stable blood sugar. But when our blood sugar is messed up, the fallout doesn't stop there. When too much insulin is repeatedly sent to manage the excess sugar, the cells start shutting their doors to the insulin, i.e. the receptor sites on the cell membranes become inflamed and unusable. Some of that excess glucose gets stored as fat, sure, but some also stays in the bloodstream. The pancreas goes into overdrive so frequently, thinking that because there's still glucose floating around, it needs to pump out more insulin. And this is called insulin resistance. That built up excess body fat also interferes with the body's ability to use insulin, which is quite a mess. We have insulin resistance, we have adrenal fatigue, we have an overtaxed, overburdened liver, and we have cell membranes that are rigid, inflamed, and unable to hear hormones. When the cell membranes become rigid and the membrane becomes inflamed, the receptors on the membrane stop working. This is not only the scenario for insulin, but also for other hormone messages, like thyroid hormone and leptin. It's a little bit like taking your car to the gas station to fill up and dumping gas, i.e. hormones, on the outside of the car cell rather than in the gas tank. And while insulin is considered our fat storage hormone, leptin is considered our fat burning hormone. Leptin is the hormone that your brain needs to receive to burn fat for energy. But once a cell membrane is inflamed, all hormone receptors become inflamed and hard of hearing, so to speak. And shouting louder, i.e. pumping in extra hormones like through hormone therapy, etc., will not make them listen any better. It's a bit like yelling at your kids, and the result being that they listen less and less. It doesn't work so well. If this scenario continues to be acted out in our bodies, which are doing their best job to manage this mess and keep us alive, we eventually end up with diabetes type 2 and or diabetes type 3, Alzheimer's, which is basically the same cellular insulin resistance scenario, but it's happening in the brain cells specifically. And it can also be managed in the same way that diabetes type 2 or other blood sugar imbalances are. Let me just go down a rabbit trail for a minute and talk about how toxins play into diabetes. There's one more factor in cellular health that figures into the conversation about hormones, diabetes, and cellular receptivity, and that is toxins. Just as excessive sugar, glucose, in the blood can inflame the cell membrane and receptors, so too can toxins. And it's not a matter of if you have toxins, but how many. In the GAPS class, we covered many sources of toxins and how to best detoxify gently, but it's worth revisiting. Where do we get these toxins? Well, one big source is from glyphosate, probably one of the biggest offenders, as it's sprayed on almost all conventional processed foods that are not 100% organic. And then we have personal care products, also one of the biggest offenders, because everything we are putting on ourselves, unless it's edible, has substances that our bodies see as foreign and strange and not okay. Then there are toxins contained in vaccinations and other pharmaceutical drugs. Whether the drugs and vaccinations are helpful or not is kind of beside the point. They do inherently have these toxins in them. Mercury fillings, home toxins from poor construction, bromine used in your computer plastic, for example. Poor quality fats like vegetable oils, and more. That's a short list of toxins we soak in, breathe in, and ingest every day. They assault our cells, they're attracted to the fats in the cell membrane. The immune system sees them as a threat, starts the inflammatory process, and then the cell membrane is compromised, along with the cellular receptors. Insulin and other hormone messengers are kept out, similar to how they are kept out in the case of blood sugar imbalance. Cell illness and death is the reason that toxins and sugar have such a widespread effect on our body. Undesirable genes are turned on, and genetic weakness is expressed in our own unique pattern, displaying the worst traits of us rather than the best of us. Now we'll return to blood sugar and some simple self-assessment questions. In this section, we'll talk about some of the indicators for determining if you have blood sugar dysregulation. They are questions to ask yourself, and they will give you an indication of whether you should be looking into better blood sugar management or not. So you can rate these questions on a 0, 1, 2, or 3 scale. 0 would mean symptom does not occur. 1 would mean yes, it's a minor or mild symptom, rarely occurs, maybe monthly. 2 would be a moderate symptom, occurs occasionally, maybe weekly. And then 3 would be a severe symptom, which occurs frequently or daily. Question number 1. Do you awaken a few hours after falling asleep and or find it hard to get back to sleep? This can be a classic symptom of low blood sugar. Our blood sugar begins to drop at night, especially around 1 a.m. If it drops too low, as in the case of hypoglycemia, the adrenals fire and this can cause us to wake up. Question number 2. Do you crave sweets? Pay attention, a craving doesn't have to be super intense. It can simply be, I would really like something sweet right now. There are a lot of reasons you might crave sweets. Blood sugar imbalances, like reactive hypoglycemia, for sure. But I also want to note that an overgrowth of yeast in the GI tract, not enough digestive hydrochloric acid and/or pancreatic enzymes, or hidden food allergies can also cause this craving. It takes at least several days for residual sugar to clear from the body, and it may take much longer for the cravings to end. The more sugar you consume, the more you will be addicted to it. Also, the more you consume it, the more B vitamins, vitamin C, and minerals, especially magnesium, will be depleted in the body's management of the nutrient-devoid sugar. Then when the adrenals are forced to pump out cortisol to manage the sugar, other minerals are depleted as well. Question number 3. Do you experience uncontrolled eating or food binges? Just like number two, this can be associated with blood sugar dysregulation, but also needs to be noted that it can be a sign that more hydrochloric acid or pancreatic enzymes are needed, or that there are hidden food allergies. Number four, do you have an excessive appetite? This is another sign of possible blood sugar dysregulation, but also can be a sign of yeast or bacteria overgrowth in the GI system, or even intestinal parasites. The overgrowth can be what is consuming the food, so the person has to eat more food to be able to digest and absorb a small amount of nutrients. Questions 5 through 10 are related, and I will read them together. Number 5, do you crave sugar or coffee in the afternoon? Number 6, are you sleepy in the afternoon? Number 7, do you experience fatigue that is made better by eating? Number 8, do you get a headache if meals are skipped or delayed? Number 9, do you tend to be easily irritated before meals? Number 10, do you get shaky if meals are delayed? All of these questions deal with a tendency towards low blood sugar, hypoglycemia, which is a condition that involves the pancreas, the liver, and the adrenals. As we've talked about above, the liver deals with short-term blood sugar control due to its store of glycogen and its ability to raise blood sugar when it begins to dip. The adrenal glands step in when there is more of a crisis of low blood sugar, using cortisol and stress hormones. Stress and blood sugar fluctuations happen so often in a stressful modern person's life that the adrenals tend to compensate for a weak pancreas. Questions 11 through 13 are also related to each other. Number 11, do you have family members with diabetes? Answer 0 for none, 1 for 2 or less, 2 for 2 to 4 people in your family, and 3 if you have more than 4 family members with diabetes. Question 12, are you frequently thirsty? Question 13, do you urinate frequently? These questions deal with symptoms that might indicate blood sugar levels that are higher than normal, or even diabetic, especially if they are also joined with symptoms like loss of sensation in lower extremities, frequent infections, and skin itching. Genetics can play a part in your risk factor for diabetes, but as you will find out in Module 3, you have much more control over this than you may think. Okay, now I want to briefly talk about the optimal glucose levels for pancreas regeneration. This is from Dr. Natasha's Frequently Asked Questions. Question: what do you think are optimal blood glucose values to promote pancreas regeneration in diabetes type 1? Answer: on an empty stomach, around 4.4 to 6.1 millimoles per liter. In the U.S., that would be 82 to 110 milligrams per deciliter. After a meal, around 7.8 to 7.9 millimoles per liter. In the U.S., that would be around 140 milligrams per deciliter. Don't worry if the values are slightly different from these, just continue working on the diet. People with diabetes type 1 need to go through the introduction diet slowly and patiently. As your pancreas starts regenerating, it will start producing its own insulin, which will start bringing your blood sugar levels to normality. That is why, when doing the GAPS nutritional protocol, it is vital to test your blood sugar level before every insulin injection. You must adjust the dose of insulin according to the level of your blood sugar in order not to overdose. Every brand of injectable insulin has its own complicated structure of dose adjustment worked out by the manufacturer. Your nurse will have all of this information about your insulin and will be able to provide you with written instructions on how to adjust the dose. Children often come down in the dose of insulin, to the point of not needing it anymore, quite quickly, in a matter of few weeks even. An adult who has suffered with diabetes for many years will take longer. End quote. Now I'm going to talk about some strategies for blood sugar and diabetes. Some strategies for stabilizing blood sugar, reversing cellular damage, and undoing damage to the primary organs of blood sugar regulation, the pancreas, the adrenals, and the liver. So dietary strategies. Here's a few dietary strategies that fit within the GAPS template. And the first one would be Dr. Natasha's fat and honey mix. This mixture is meant to be taken wherever you go for about a month or longer so that you can eat 2 to 3 tablespoons up to every 15 to 30 minutes or whenever you get a craving. This will help stabilize your blood sugar over time. The recipe that you could try is 1 cup, which would be 226 grams, of organic butter or ghee or coconut oil or a mixture of those, and 1 to 2 tablespoons of honey, just enough to sweeten it. Another dietary strategy is, of course, to emphasize saturated fats and cholesterol. Our cell membranes are made of saturated fats and cholesterol. So consuming these in regular amounts in enough quantity will restore our cellular membrane structure so nutrients and hormonal messages can pass back and forth. You'll want to juice differently for diabetes. For those with blood sugar issues, juicing on GAPS is started with green juices and lemon only, not the sweeter vegetables and fruits. The sweeter vegetables being things like beets and carrots. Eventually, you should be able to drink something like Pink Power, which is the GAPS milkshake, which I've linked to in the workbook. And then there's the GAPS blood sugar diet. Please refer to Module 10 of the GAPS class, which I've linked in the workbook, for information about a blood sugar reset that fits within the GAPS protocol. In the workbook, there's a whole chart of, you know, what foods are in and what foods are out. Please reference that on page 16. And also, there's a link to blood sugar menu and recipe ideas that can be found on the Honest Buddy website. If you're struggling with blood sugar issues, and especially if you're dealing with diabetes, you'll want to kind of do a GAPS blood sugar diet for longer than normal. Usually this can be used as like a 2-week reset, but I would suggest a much longer use if you're struggling with blood sugar issues or diabetes in particular. So, will GAPS cure and prevent diabetes? To quote Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride, yes. There are 2 forms of diabetes, type 1 and type 2. Type 1 is an autoimmune disorder, where the body attacks and destroys the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. All autoimmunity is born in the gut, and following the GAPS program will heal the gut and restructure the immune system. In my experience, and still quoting Dr. Natasha here, as the patient progresses through the treatment, he or she is able to slowly reduce the dose of insulin, and in many cases, to stop the injections altogether. Type 2 diabetes is caused by the body becoming insulin resistant because of continuous consumption of processed carbohydrates. GAPS diet removes all processed carbohydrates so the body can heal the damage and remove diabetes. Once better, as long as the person continues to stick to a low-carbohydrate, nourishing diet for the rest of his or her life, the diabetes should never return. That's pretty good news, huh? Lifestyle strategies. Sleep, and more sleep. Sleep is when many of our detoxification processes are happening. It also helps reset our hormones. And earlier sleep gets you more bang for your buck. For example, 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. is worth more than 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. in sleep dollars. Experiment. When do you need to get up? Is it 6 o'clock? Dial back your bedtime to a time when you are able to naturally wake up at 6 a.m. Your body knows what it needs. Another lifestyle strategy is the detox practices of GAPS. I invite you to review the other detoxification practices talked about in Module 8 of the GAPS class, which I've linked to in the workbook. Next, we'll talk about supplement strategies, but I want to first give you a few notes. These are possible supplement strategies, and they should be discussed with your own physician or health practitioner. Monitor your blood glucose levels as necessary. Another note is that they should be taken alongside the GAPS version of the blood sugar reset diet mentioned above, or after you've been through the GAPS protocol for a good length of time. Next note would be to drink half of your body weight in ounces every day at least. And then these supplements are by biotics research, but equivalents can generally be found in standard process supplements as well as other supplement companies. All right, so there are 6 supplements recommended in a high blood sugar suggested protocol. Number 1 is GlucoBalance, 3 capsules with 3 meals a day for a month, then 2 capsules with each meal. Number 2 is Biomega 3, 2 capsules 3 times a day, or an equivalent omega 3 fish oil supplement. Number 3 is Betaine plus HP, or another hydrochloric acid supplement, increasing by 1 capsule per meal every third day until you feel a slight burning sensation in your stomach, then reduce to the next lowest level. Number 4 is Cytozyme PAN, which stands for pancreas, 2 tablets 3 times a day with meal. Number 5, ADHS, 2 to 4 tablets in the morning and at noon. This is an herbal adrenal adaptogen, and you don't want to be taking it in the evening or it could cause sleeplessness. Number 6, lipoic acid, 2 capsules 3 times a day. That was the high blood sugar suggested protocol. Here is the low blood sugar suggested protocol, a total of 3 supplements. Number 1, Bioglycoszyme Forte, 3 tablets, 3 times a day, which can be taken 2 hours after meals, for example, 10 a.m., 2 p.m., 8 p.m. But if your stomach is upset when taking them on an empty stomach, then just take them with your meals with extra hydrochloric acid. Number 2, Amino Acid Quicksorb, 10 to 15 drops between meals, as needed for symptoms of low blood sugar, like cravings and low energy. And number 3, ADB5 plus, 2 tablets in the morning and 2 tablets at noon. If taken later in the day, it may induce sleeplessness. For extreme fatigue, you can take up to 1 per hour as soon as you get up, as many as 9. Just a note on the links for these supplements. They're linked within the workbook, but you'll want to go to the Biotics Research customer website before using these links, otherwise they won't work for you. So strategies for adrenal health. We can't talk about blood sugar health without also talking about the adrenals, as managing your blood sugar will start you on your way to better adrenal health as well. They're really closely connected. And one side bonus is, if you take care of your adrenals, they assist you in letting go of heavy metals. There are 3 stages of adrenal fatigue. The first stage would be the hyper, the gland overcompensates. The second stage would be kind of a ping pong. The gland is sputtering between hypo and hyper. It is recovering and crashing, recovering and crashing. And then the third stage is hypo, where the gland is just simply exhausted. Give them lots of time. Adrenals take a while to recover, and it's important to be kind to yourself, i.e. your adrenals. Adrenal health has long-lasting implications. For example, there's a connection between the condition of the adrenal glands and how poorly one goes through menopause. In addition to blood sugar management, here are some dietary, lifestyle, and supplement strategies specifically for adrenals. Okay, dietary strategies. As Dr. Natasha says, adrenals love fat and cholesterol. Aim to feed them with one or more of these foods every meal if you can. 1. Egg yolks. 2. Sour cream. 3. Butter or other animal fat. And 4. Fatty fish. And they really like good quality salt too. Okay, lifestyle strategies. I'm going to repeat this because it's that important. Sleep, sleep, and more sleep. We averaged 1 to 1.5 hours more sleep per night about 50 years ago. That's a solid month of sleep per year that we aren't getting. Again, earlier sleep gets you more bang for your buck, so that 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. is worth more than 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. in sleep dollars. Reduce your stress. Practice the very fine art of saying no to all but that which is most meaningful to you and your family. And even then, cut something out. You're only doing the world a favor by being happier and living your own life and not someone else's version. Supplement strategies. Some of these supplements will overlap with the blood sugar supplements, as they are closely related. Note, these supplements give a starting point. If adrenal or endocrine function is acutely dysfunctional, further supplemental strategies may be needed. Okay, adrenal hyperfunction or overdrive strategies, when your adrenals are overfiring. There's 5 supplements in this category. Number 1, ADHS. 2 to 3 tablets twice a day in the morning and at noon. Number 2, cytosine PTHTP, which is pituitary and hypothalamus gland. 2 to 4 tablets twice a day in the morning and at noon. Number 3, glucobalance. 2 to 3 capsules 3 times a day. Number 4, optimal EFAs. 2 capsules 3 times a day with meals. And this is similar to Biomega 3, except it has a broader range of fatty acids. Number 5, de-stress. 1 to 2 capsules during the day, and 1 to 2 capsules at bedtime. This could be replaced by something like a mindfulness practice, or a homeopathic regimen, or essential oil regimen. Okay, so strategies for when your adrenals are on the floor. In hypofunction. There are 5 in this category as well. Number 1, cytosine AD, which is adrenal gland. 2 to 3 tablets 3 times a day with meals. Or ADB5+, if adrenal hypofunction is significant. And you would take 2 tablets in the morning and 2 at noon of those. Number 2, bioglycoside forte. 2 tablets 3 times a day with meals and hydrochloric acid. Number 3, Celtic sea salt, 1 teaspoon per day. And this could be salt that you put on your food, and it could be salt that you put in lemon water. That can be counted towards the 1 teaspoon per day. Number 4, Bio-3BG, 3 tablets 3 times a day between meals. And number 5, 21st century homeopathic for chronic stress. 1 capful 4 times a day for 2 weeks, then reduce to 1 capful twice a day. So those are some strategies for adrenal health and blood sugar health. What's next? In Module 2, we're going to be covering the topic of lab tests, recommended lab tests, when to test, as well as infections of the parasite, bacterial, and viral nature, and GAPS-friendly strategies and recommendations. I'll talk to you then.